Hello, this is class number, what number are we on? 23, I guess. And is it 23 or 24? Class number 24, sorry. And it is from November 15, and it's a class where we left negligence, started talking about a brand new cause of action. Remember, a negligence in itself is a cause of action, and there are little sub-causes of action, negligent infliction of emotional distress, for example. But now we're moving away from the whole concept of negligent activity, that is, breach of a duty of reasonable care, to strict liability. And in all the cases that you've talked about, we've talked about before, the plaintiff has been required to show that the defendant acted with fault. Now we're moving to types of cases that the plaintiff need not prove fault. Later we'll be talking about when the plaintiff needs to prove intent, but at this time we're talking about cases where you don't prove fault or intent, and this is the doctrine known as strict liability. Strict liability means you don't, it's liability without fault or intent. You still have to prove causation, but factual causation alone isn't enough. You have to look away from the actions of the party towards looking at the activity. So before, we've been looking for actions, remember, when we're talking about actions, you're held to a duty of reasonable care in your action. If you're driving, if you're operating some kind of a construction job, if you're laying conduit on the street, all of these things are actions, and you're held to a duty of reasonable care in your actions. Now we're looking at certain types of activities that where the courts have deemed, the laws deemed, either so unusual, so risky, so risk-based that they can't be done safely, or for some policy reason, we're going to say, if you've shown causation and there's no viable defense, you will be held liable strictly without showing fault. So strict liability isn't the equivalent of absolute liability, which would be liability always. Strict liability, you need to show causation, and defenses can still be available. So absolute liability, no defenses. Strict liability, still defenses. So we talked a bit about how, and we talked originally in the class about how strict liability was the rule of the land. You know, whatever you cause, if you cause an injury, you're going to be responsible. After, of course, the Industrial Revolution, too many accidents, too much responsibilities, courts backed away from strict liability and went into adopted negligence as the rule of the land here. So that's, we've been concentrating on negligence. Now we're taking a step back to the notion that even after the adoption of negligence, some things remained in a strict liability environment. Some things remained in a strict liability environment. So what we have to look at are what remains. And you just have to, you know, memorize these, know these, learn these. The idea of strict liability continues for some kinds of activities, whether it's owning animals that escape your property, owning wild animals, owning a domestic animal of known dangerous propensities, or doing something on your land that, even though it's something you're entitled to do, if it escapes your land, if it injures somebody on some other property, you may be held strictly liable. So the latter example is exemplified by the two cases, Rylands v. Fletcher, Fletcher v. Rylands. Old cases that talk about doing something on your land that when it escapes, you know, it's perfectly okay to do it on your land. When it escapes, though, and causes harm, you're going to be strictly liable. And they use the example of putting a reservoir on your land, fill it with water, that's just fine, but if the water escapes in it and causes harm on your neighbor's property, strict liability. So it's incompatible land use, strictly liable. And we'll be talking about this a little bit more when we talk about trespass and nuisance, because they're kind of strict liability torts. Defense is available, but not intentional. Not negligent, still held strict liability. It's still held strict. Here, though, strict liability really is, and for certain types of activity. The blasting cases, courts find that there are certain things that are so dangerous, certain activities, that it's okay to do them, but if they injure you, you know, you're going to be held strictly liable for that. Why does this make sense? Well, because if you want to be a blaster, you raise your rates, you buy an insurance, big old insurance policy, raise your rates to cover the premiums, and keep on in that business. You know, the courts just says if it's such a dangerous business, it's okay to do it, but you're going to be strictly liable. It's strict liability is very much at its basic a matter of economics. Who bears the loss? And since we're talking about activities, it's very easy to determine that the person doing the activity should bear the loss. You can predict it. You just build it into your costs. It's predictable that there's going to be losses from, you know, using dynamite, doing these dangerous activities. And this was sort of exemplified by the restatement. When the first restatement in particular, that talks about ultra-hazardous activities. They're uncommon, not a matter of, you know, daily life, uncommon, and you can build in the cost of doing it. So strict liability for ultra-hazardous activities. It's Restatement 520. Restatement 2, however, comes along and kind of messes that up a little bit. Says, what's an ultra-hazardous, doesn't talk about ultra-hazardous, talks about dangerous activities, and introduce abnormally dangerous, introduces a whole element of reasonable care into them. Well, if it can't be done safely with reasonable care, Restatement 2 starts talking about, well, maybe it's abnormally dangerous. And this is a big criticism of the Restatement 2nd, that it's too easy to mesh it. It's too easy to merge into negligence when you're using Restatement 2nd. The idea that you're saying something is unreasonably dangerous by saying, well, it can't be done safely, instead of it's just dangerous. So we saw that in the Indiana Harbor Belt case versus American Cyanamid, in that the court was concentrating, in the court, meaning Richard Posner, was just saying that what exactly is the activity they're talking about? Is the activity shipping this dangerous chemical or manufacturing the dangerous chemical? You can manufacturing a dangerous chemical, according to the restatement second, Posner says, is not an inherently dangerous activity. It's not an abnormally dangerous activity. It's a dangerous chemical, but you can manufacture it safely. So Posner gets out of strict liability, and he doesn't want to be in strict liability because, remember, strict liability means liability, much more liability than under negligence. Posner gets out of strict liability through the looking at the restatement second and just says manufacturing a dangerous chemical can be done safely. And the restatement second says what's an abnormal activity? It's something that can't be done safely. So restatement second, the critics, and this is an example of the critics saying it's too easy to get out of strict liability and go into negligence because of the restatement second, that third, you know, subsection C there basically is a negligence standard, and it's too easy to get into negligence. Here in the Indiana Harbor Belt case, the notice how Posner kind of reshapes the conversation and says, well, it's not the shipping. It's not the shipping. They didn't, you know, the plaintiff made a mistake and went after the manufacturer. You know, it can be shipped safely. It can be manufactured safely. It can be shipped safely. It can be carried on the train safely. It doesn't have to leak. The leak is the problem. And so negligence is the proper environment for this. And then with the final kind of grouping of cases in strict liability is strict liability for certain kinds of activities involving wild animals, pets, escaping animals. And if you're going to keep cattle and wild animals, then you have to be responsible if they do harm. Lots of dog bite cases. Strict liability for injuries done by domestic animals of known dangerous propensities. And dog bite cases, when does your animal have known dangerous propensities? I read you the case of Ace, the German Shepherd, that kept mauling the little Bichon Frises, even though the Ace's owner said, I tried to keep Ace in, I did whatever I could, I put him in a huge pen and it was electrified and he still escaped. I was as reasonable as possible, and the court said, you know this dog is dangerous. He's done it before, he'll bite again. And the court says strict liability. Keep in mind, in New York, not all dogs deserve one free bite. It doesn't have to have bitten before to be of known dangerous propensities. That's just another factor. But just because he's never bit anyone before doesn't mean your dog isn't of known dangerous propensities. Does it growl? Does it snap? Does it drool? Is it a pit bull? Is it a bad dog that everybody's been afraid of? Again, strict liability. Okay, so next class we're going to talk about trespass and nuisance. Also sort of strict. You know, they're sort of strict, meaning you don't show negligence. The injury is the harm may be negligible for both of them. The injury is the trespass. The injury is the nuisance. It doesn't have to show great damage, but there does have to be harm. Can be negligible, it can still be harm. So trespass and nuisance. And again, I asked you to think about some of the New York Law School's neighbors say the new building is a nuisance. Why do you think that is so?